Welcome to the Subversive Scribe Podcast, where we investigate the Hebrew Bible, Genesis through Chronicles, its instructions, teachings, and application. Learn how to interpret it correctly in context. Compare what it says in one part with another part, including and especially the New Testament. Let the text speak for itself in all its glory and in all its gore. Let the law, prophets, and writings be shield and spear. All it takes is the courage to hear it, seek it, and then decide on how you shall then live. The choice is always yours. I'm your show host, Jesse Heschel, and I invite you, even dare you, to join me on this journey on the Subversive Scribe Podcast. The biblical texts were always dangerous and subversive when allowed to speak on their own terms. Join the Scriven Insurgents, and let's get started with today's episode. All right, welcome back to the Subversive Scribe Podcast. Thanks for being with me. And this is episode 10. And this one is called 10 Men from the Nations and a Fistful of Tassels. In the last podcast, I had talked about different criteria, five different specific criteria for messianic criteria, and did Jesus meet them? And if you're still with me, thank you. And I want to be very clear that I don't mean to hurt anyone's feelings or break your heart or cause you to angst or anger, especially if you're a Christian and you heard that. I'm here to tell you the truth. I'm here to let you know to read correctly, how to read correctly, how to follow the straightforward, plain sense meaning of the text, and to subvert expectations. That's why I am your subversive scribe. And my name is Hesh, and let's get started. Now, there's an important verse that I mentioned. It's part of the messianic criteria, and that was the worldwide knowledge of God. There's a passage that talks about how the nations will grab hold of the corner garment, or the tassels, of probably the tassels, we're going to call it tassels, the corner garment of the Jews, and say, hey, we know that now that God is with you, take us with you. It's an important verse that's worth reviewing because it's set in the future. It's important because it presents a time when people from the nations, that is, non-Jews, will come to the Jews and cling to the God of Israel. This should really come as a shock. In fact, the Hebrew Bible predicts that the nations would be shocked. And certainly that would be true, especially Christians who spent their lives talking about how God replaced the Jews with the church and how the Torah was done away with and the law had been replaced by grace, as if the Jews knew nothing of grace, mercy, or favor, which is a complete misnomer. Now, Zechariah 8:20-23 says, thus says the Lord of hosts, it will yet be that peoples will come, even the inhabitants of many cities. The inhabitants of one will go to another, saying, let us go at once to entreat the favor of the Lord, and to seek the Lord of hosts, I also will go. So many peoples and mighty nations will come to seek the Lord of hosts in Jerusalem and to entreat the favor of the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts, in those days 10 men from all the nations will grasp the garment of a Jew, saying, let us go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. So the last part, 10 men of the nations shall grab hold of the corner garments, and what that might have to do with you, especially if you're not a Jew. Especially if you're not a religious practicing Jew. Now, here's the context, which will help us with interpreting the passage. Okay, this is post-destruction of the first temple, and the people are just coming back after a 70-year exile that was spoken about by Jeremiah. This is why Ezra and Nehemiah are important, and we should read them very closely. The church does not. The work was rough. It wasn't nearly as great or wonderful as the first temple. It felt small and silly and useless. Imagine having a really great house that was fancy and swanky and super nice, and then it burns down, and you replace it with a mobile home. It's not that the holy place is less holy, it's just underwhelming. Now, Haggai, the prophet, the book, is a book dedicated to getting the rebuilding going again, even though it seems small and silly and useless. But Jerusalem was slowly being repopulated, and people were returning, and the temple was going up. Now, Zechariah, he's also a post-exilic prophet, is in that period of time, and he's dealing with the same thing. So when Zechariah says that there will be urgency, verse 21, let us go at once immediately to entreat the favor of God, that wasn't happening at the time. But the promise is that it will happen. You also have to remember, and we can see Nehemiah for this, that there will be other nations that were hostile to the rebuilding of the second temple and re-inhabiting Jerusalem. The Samaritans, you can also see in the book of Haggai, which cross-references it, were not fond of it either. The Samaritans were the people who were left behind during the exile and intermingled with those who were brought in by Babylon. So Babylon's policy was one of deportation. They deported most people, left the sick and the poor and the weak who couldn't make the trip. They brought in other peoples and resettled them there. And then those people married and interchanged with and basically became interbred and interwoven with those people who had been there from the Babylonian era. So if you came back as grandchildren to your native homeland in Israel and you found it full of people who had been there with the Babylonians who had destroyed your family, you can understand why they didn't get along. The Samaritans were hodgepodge and without some roots in the land, because some of them had been sent there from deportation by the Babylonians from other lands. And of course it creates animosity. That is always the path that empires like to take. They like to deport people and re-put different populations there. It breaks your connection to the land. It breaks ancestral home roots. It makes you more likely to be loyal to the empire. So they had been there for a long while, 60 plus years, and all of a sudden the former inhabitants come back and they want everything their way. So you can understand why there's hostility. So for Zechariah to suggest that people will claw and fight their way to get to Jerusalem, it's probably saying, what? Jerusalem is run down in Zechariah's day, and it's not what it was. But Zechariah 8 seems to foresee a time when that will all change. It sees a time when the nations, not just the non-Jews, will grasp or grip or cling to the corner garment of the Jews, because the nations will have, quote, heard that God is with them, that God is with the Jews. This would have been stunning to hear, even more stunning to see. Now, did it happen in their day? It doesn't look like it. Clearly, the nations are still hostile to Israel and the Jewish tradition. But what would it look like, and why 10 nations, and what are they grabbing? First, let's talk about the number 10. So the number 10 in context isn't just 10. That would be silly. But Peshat isn't literal, remember. The straightforward plain sense reading of a passage is not literal but contextual, and it has to include idioms and figures of speech. That is, again, our first layer of meaning. So 10 is a number of completion. Think of the Ten Commandments. A tithe is a tenth. 10 times God says in the creation account in Genesis, if you're counting, though the chapter breaks are artificial, that things are good. In even the Christian New Testament, you will have tribulation 10 days in Revelation 2:10, even though Christians know that isn't a literal number, and they're borrowing the significance of the number 10 from the Tanakh. There was no formal New Testament, of course, when Revelation was written, somewhere between 68 BC and 95 BC, depending on where you are in the academy. That's usually given the range for the authorship of Revelation. So whoever wrote the book of Revelation was borrowing Hebrew numbers and the significance and symbolism of numbers to represent that you will have tribulation 10 days. The readers would have known that it's not a literal number, because if it's only 10 days, that's dope. I'll take that right now. I've had my 10 and more. Now, we should also reference Isaiah 60, also, which notes a time when Jerusalem and the nation will be center stage because God is with the Jews. It says, "Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For behold, darkness will cover the earth, and deep darkness the peoples. But the Lord will rise upon you, and his glory will appear upon you. Nations will come to your light, and the kings to the brightness of your rising." So 10 men from the nations, a complete number, will come to them, the Jews. And it is them, it's a plural, it's not ha, or the Jew. And some have tried to say, well, when it says Jew, it means the Jew, specifically Jesus. That's a missionary approach, which is not substantiated by the text itself. It's used as an apologetic by Christian missionaries in regard to that specific passage. And it's important to note, because according to Paul, now I don't think Jesus said this, he doesn't say this, but Paul says that the Torah is done away with due to the human sacrifice of Jesus. But Zechariah envisions a time when the nations come to the Jews and grab hold of their corner sleeves, robes, or garments. It's plural because the nations are, "Let us go with you all," as an imakim. That's the word for it in Hebrew. It's two-person, masculine, plural. It's not about Jesus. So what are these corners? What is this grip on the garments? It's likely a reference to the tassels that are commanded to be worn on the four corners of a garment, per Numbers 15, 38 through 39, and Deuteronomy 22, 12. Now these are for remembering the commands of God, quote, "throughout the generations that are to come," Numbers 15, 8, 38. Sure seems like that command is pretty eternal for a set of instructions that are supposedly temporal. The root word translated as corners, sleeves, robes is shared with Numbers 15:38 and Deuteronomy 22:12, so we're in pretty good waters grammatically and linguistically. The nations are grabbing, they are gripping those corners, again, likely the tassels, the religious tassels meant to remind you of God's commands, because they have heard that God is with them, you all, the Jews, and to entreat favor from God. It's God's personal memorial name, Yod Heh Vav Heh. It's faithful and religiously loyal Jews, of course, that are being entreated this. It isn't the self-hating Jew or the Jew who's Jewish ethnically, but an atheist or a pagan religiously. It isn't the Noam Chomskys of the world. no matter how valuable his contribution was to linguistics, and it was quite valuable. This is very likely a future event, since we don't see it happening during Zechariah's days. We also know that Zechariah prophesies in 14:9, "The Lord will be king over the whole earth. On that day there will be," it's his name, God's name, "alone, and his name will be the only name." Now, we clearly do not see that and never have. There are lots of names and lots of gods in Zechariah's days and in ours. This will likely come about when the Messianic ages come, a final temple rebuilt, see Ezekiel 37 through 48, and of course see episode 9 for that information. So what are we to do? If you're going to be grabbing hold of the corner garments of the Jews, this is what Zechariah says is going to happen to the nations, the religious tassels to remember the commands, the argument would be, wouldn't you want to get a head start on that and go for it now? So if the Torah is eternal, and he clearly means it to be, which is for, that's another episode, the nations are foretold to grab hold of the Jews to go with them, not because they're rich or nice or handsome or anything particularly interesting about them. It isn't about the characteristics of the Jews, but rather it's about God's covenant loyalty to them, because God is with them. This is what Zechariah is saying. The nations are going to go and grab the corner garments and say, take us with you, because God's with you. God's with the Jews. Clearly, religious Jews wearing tassels, if we accept that reading, which is likely the correct one. Again, it isn't like he's going with the Noam Chomskys of the world. And so, again, the question is, why wouldn't you jump in now? If I told you that I have a company that is guaranteed to make Amazon look like a third-grade lemonade stand, and you invest in it early, you'll be wealthy beyond your beliefs, wouldn't you do it? You'd be crazy not to. How many people wish they invested in Microsoft and Google and Amazon and Apple before they became big? And Zechariah is saying that this whole God of Israel thing is going to be big. Now, final note about that. Right now, it's hard. It's hard because there isn't a temple standing. There's no Messiah, messianic figure from David via Solomon. Even though the Jews actually hold the actual land of Israel, there's still an abundance of iniquity. That only makes the merit greater when you make those choices. And that's actually what the rabbinic tradition says, that there's more merit given to you when you make choices when they're hard, not when they're easy. And from there, they would say, pick up the Tanakh and study, and strive to follow after God. And renounce all gods and seek the God of Israel alone, because as Zechariah says, he will be the only one and his name will be the only one. Now, when there's a temple and there's a Messiah and the Messiah is teaching and leading and the nations follow him and we have a time of universal peace and war ceases, we turn our weapons into plowshares, whatever it is that the Messiah is going to do when the people of Israel, they're following God, when God is the only one and his name is the only one, because it's that obvious, it's not going to be an object of faith, it's going to be obvious, what merit is there to that? No, I'm not saying go to blind faith, but rather test these things and interpret correctly. And that's, of course, the point of the podcast, is that we interpret correctly. So if we're going to interpret correctly, and Zechariah says clearly that this is going to happen, the argument would be, well, why not get started early? There's more merit for you when that happens. How much more merit and consideration and greatness comes from doing the right thing when it's hard versus when it's easy? I mean, what credit is it to you? If a UFO were to land on the White House lawn, everyone will believe in UFOs at that point, right? All the people that believe now, that did the hard work and did research, and this isn't to get into UFO topics, but, you know, the people that your cousin that believed and told you, yeah, man, I saw a UFO, and you all laughed at him, well, guess who's laughing now? My point is, what credit is it to you when it's easy? Do it when it's hard. It's also why the messianic question is going to be easy to answer. Because everyone will know the Messiah has come, because it will be obvious. Because those things will happen, like we talked about in episode 9. But that's a whole other topic for another episode, or 10. All right, that's today's episode. And I am your subversive scribe, Hesh. And as always, stay subversive. Thanks for listening. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Support for the Subversive Scribe comes from private subscribers, generous supporters, and a community of inquiring people who are willing to take the biblical texts seriously and subversively. Join the Scriven Insurgents, the private community built for Subversive Scribe podcast subscribers, on our Locals page at subversivescribe.locals.com. Click on Become a Supporter, and for $5 a month as a member of the Scriven Insurgents, you get access to private Subversive Scribe episodes, teaching series, audible commentaries, and exclusive content. Your support makes the Subversive Scribe podcast possible. Join the Scriven Insurgents and stay subversive.